The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by Gamefly.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
Beyond.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Beyond, episode 513. My name is Marty Sleva. I'm joined by Andrew Goldfarb.
And that's it.
And that's it. This is going to be a special Beyond Fireside Chat, which is something that we used to do back in the day.
Yep.
The reason there's only two of us here is because everything's kind of crazy.
Yep.
New York Comic Con's happening. Zach and Max are shooting a Facebook show. Alon and Brian both have some personal stuff going on. But these two-person Fireside Chats are sort of a part of Beyond history.
Yeah, a little more of an intimate time.
Yeah, these existed back in the days of Greg and Colin and, and Clements, and you were on plenty of them. So we decided it's just going to be the two of us this week, but we do have a couple really cool things to talk about. We're going to talk about a couple things we've been playing, which are super exciting. One is Assassin's Creed, and one is Danganronpa V3.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about how October might be the best month ever for PS Plus games.
Pretty much.
PSVR is getting a new model, and I'm not sure how we feel about that. PS4, PlayStation as a whole, now has a new CEO president.
Yep.
Which is exciting, so we're going to speculate what that might mean. And then we're going to talk a little bit about PUBG and whether or not PlayStation fans will ever get their hands on it.
Yeah, and other indie games.
Indie games. First off, let's talk about what we've been playing. Let's start off with Danganronpa, if you go to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/IGNBeyond, you can check out a Let's Play that Andrew, Alana, and I did, which is a very entertaining primer into just what the hell this game is.
Yeah, it's completely insane. It is the weirdest... Like, it was funny because when we were going in, I was like, this game's really weird.
Yeah.
And you guys were both like, all right. Like, I've played word games. No, it's 10 times weirder than you would think.
Yeah, it's so this is the third core game in the series. It's a visual novel murder mystery that's almost like a take on like Battle Royale, where there's a bunch of kids trapped in a school, and one by one they start killing each other, and you sort of have to solve who's doing it, who done it.
Exactly. And it's like, it's structured, there are kind of three. It starts as a visual novel. It's like very, very text heavy. And then when you explore, it's almost like a Telltale style. Like you're walking around in first person, identifying points of interest and kind of discovering things as you go. But then during the class of trials, it's this weird, almost WarioWare-esque, maybe a little longer than that, mini games that you play that like get you through it. And so it's utterly bizarre. It's the weirdest style of gameplay you can imagine. The ending of that game, obviously no spoilers, but the ending of that game is going to stick with me for a very, very long time.
So you did finish it?
I did finish it
this
weekend. Overall, it's probably like 40 hours.
Were you playing on Vita?
I played the entire thing on Vita, yeah. I wonder, like, I was thinking about that. I wonder if that's the last time I will put that much time into a Vita game.
Yeah.
Because I mean,
honestly, that might be.
This is the Vita game I've been waiting for. And it's on PS4. It's in 4K. It looks incredible on PS4. And it has cross-save and everything. But... man, I really wanted to play on a Vita. I played the first time on Vita, and like I'm happy to put that time into it. But man, I wonder what else is even coming.
Yeah, I mean, and also I don't know. Having played that first game, I'm sort of bummed that I missed the train on this earlier, and I want to go back to play the first Danganronpa, which you said is much shorter.
Yep.
But still equally cool, just because like the game has so many really interesting ideas. And I'm like, you sort of primed us. You're like, guys, this is weird, Alana. We're like, yeah, we know weird. Like, it's totally fine. And we got like 10 minutes in that game. And we're like, what are these little bears? Who are these men?
Yeah.
Why is one so extremely sexual?
I like that it leans into how weird it is sometimes. Yeah. But yeah, there's also like, there is that. Like, as much, like, it is very funny to roll your eyes at, yeah. But also like, this game's definitely a little more vulgar. I think they kind of dialed it up.
Some of it felt a little, like, I love swearing. Some of it felt weirdly out of place.
Yeah, like, I kind of agree with that.
Swearing for swearing's sake.
There's one character who is, like, very, very abrasive, and she's, like, super vulgar, and that's, like, one of her, like, the thing is she's, like, super, super, super aggressive, and then the minute you challenge her, she's, like, really meek, and it's, like, a weird character thing. So, I don't know. There are characters, I actually really like the characters in this for the most part, but I do think, like, it dialed up some things that it probably didn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
That said, like, man, do I love how it all tied together. And, like, I don't know if we'll get another Danganronpa game. Like, this feels like it could be just a trilogy of very weird games.
Yeah. Whereas Persona is a series that over time sort of grew to become this, you know, worldwide phenomenon, like, getting stellar reviews. Everyone's talking about it. Like, clearly they're going to go back to a P6 after Project ReFantasy, in my opinion.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like they claim to be done with Persona. They claim that the new studio, as we shift over to Atlas, they claim that new studio has other projects even after ReFantasy already in the works.
Catherine 2?
Maybe it is Catherine 2. They teased it.
I hope it's Catherine 2.
Yeah, with Danganronpa, it's so weird because, like, I don't know if we'll see another one, but, like, this feels like the most complete game. Mm-hmm. Like, even when you beat it, you unlock all of these, like, cool, like, bonus modes, and you can, like, go back through and, like, make it into, there's weirdly this mode that, like, goes back and lets you kind of replay through without the killing. It mm-hmm. seems like, I don't know, I'm really early into that, but I like the game quite a bit. I really want to talk to someone about the ending because it's insane.
And it's just interesting and different. Which yesterday, Alana and I were playing through the C ending of Nier Automata. And that is one of those things where, like, when I think about Nier, I didn't really enjoy the act of playing it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think the combat's great, despite the fact that Platinum worked on it. I think it's sort of ugly, and I think a lot of the stuff you do is monotonous. But the more I think about that game, the story, the presentation, the ideas, and just, like, the way it's a game that could only be a game. Like, yeah. It has so many elements that if you turn it into an anime or a book or a TV show, wouldn't work, because so much of it has to do with your interaction with it and you as the player and sort of concepts of AI and sentience and everything.
I like that a lot. Wow, yeah. what a smart way to think about it. Like, yeah. I think that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you have any, like, we were talking about games that you like to think about more than play. And Alana was talking about Majora's Mask, where it's a game that on paper she loves, but playing it is the time mechanic is a little bit tedious.
I mean, any cinematic game, like either of the newer Tomb Raiders or Last of Us or Bioshock Infinite, like, you, like, man, do I love The Last of Us, and man, do I love those Tomb Raider reboots. But when you actually go back and try and replay them, you find yourself sort of just playing through to get to the next cutscene, sure. I think. And some of the combat and exploration can get a little bit repetitive. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the game. But yeah, that's a really good point, too. Like, thinking about, I think that's what's weird about an interactive medium is, like, a lot of, like, you look at an episode of a Telltale game and it's like, whatever, 2-3 hours. Mm-hmm. But, like, when you go to, like, a 40-hour game, especially when you're talking about revisiting it, like, it doesn't, I think its flaws kind of are more apparent.
Yeah, and I think a lot of games, like, Last of Us is perfect to where, like, I adore The Last of Us, and I think about it all the time, and I hold it up to a really high pinnacle, but I hold its moments and its story and how it made me feel up to that pinnacle, whereas I don't think the game is necessarily fun. Like, I don't want to go back. I don't think it has that Bungie, you know, Halo/Destiny 20-second loop, which they sort of perfected, and that's, like, that's the drug that keeps dripping into your system through the IV. Like, that's not what The Last of Us is to me. The Last of Us is a thing that I experienced once, and I'm sort of fine with experience once.
Yeah.
Like, I'm excited for Last of Us 2, and I love Left Behind, but, like, maybe I'll replay the first Last of Us. I probably will before 2, because I'm sure there'll be some nods that I forgot in the 5 years in between them or whatever.
Especially, like, returning characters. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
Totally. I've been meaning to do that, too.
Yeah. So talking the game I've been playing, which we can talk about now because the preview embargo's up, I got to put about 4 hours into Assassin's Creed Origins.
Yay.
Which is super exciting. It's really good, and it is definitely a game that falls in the Bungie Destiny camp of it's about the moments, and I had fun playing. The 4 hours to me was about the moment to moment. Like, sort of it threw us. It was near-ish, I think, the middle of the game, and Ubisoft always does this with the final preview event for these games, you know, a month before they come out, where it's just like, go nuts. Here's a giant chunk of the map. It's open. All the side quests are here. You have a mainline story quest you could do, but just go do other stuff. And so I definitely did that. Like, I finished the main story, which was interesting, and I don't want to spoil, but it had a really cool sort of twist to it that also puts you in like a scenario that I thought was really cool that I hadn't seen in a game before. Like, it introduces a concept in a story, and then all of a sudden you're forced to live that concept in a really cool way. But then the moment to moment stuff, it's funny. I think this is just becoming a thing that is going to happen to a lot of open world games this generation, but it's totally, these games are becoming sort of single player MMOs, and they're taking that loot drop, you know, purple, gold, green, exotics, rares, legendaries that MMO has been doing forever, that World of Warcraft has been doing forever. And I feel like the first single-player game I can remember doing that was Darksiders 2, where it felt like a single-player MMO.
Yeah, and it's like, obviously, like Borderlands, you can play by yourself. Yeah. But it's like you also have that option of teaming up.
Yeah. And then now it's obviously huge in Destiny 2. Shadow of War is leaning into that. But Assassin's Creed definitely leans into it in a really cool way. Like, I loved running around that world and slowly upgrading Bayek. Like, the skill tree is just super diverse, and it's totally like, do you want to just like lean super heavily into melee? Do you want all traversal? Do you want to upgrade the fact that you can poison people from the dark? And then every 5 minutes I felt like I was getting a new weapon or item or piece of gear that was slowly, like, incrementally increasing my stats, which I think that's one of the things that really hooked me about Destiny, was that, like, it felt like that initial curve, especially to 260, 280, felt like every 10 minutes I was making progress towards that goal.
Yeah.
And then
that is addictive too. Like, yeah. I think even to some extent, Breath of the Wild has that.
Totally.
Like, I think that sense of like progression, Assassin's Creed's always been really good about like getting you through a story or whatever. But I feel like the last game I remember, what was it, 2, that lets you like build out your villa and everything?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that felt like you could customize it, but you weren't customizing your character at all.
No.
And so I like that, like, this feels like such a natural evolution, because like Syndicate gave you more freedom, and like little by little they've been getting there, but now this is like, you still have all that freedom of exploration, but this is the first time it feels like they're letting you customize character stuff.
Customize characters, and everything has like these, you constantly have these sub goals that are rooted inside main missions or even side quests. And I think that's one of the things that really stuck with me, Persona, is that you are constantly, yeah, you're moving through the story, but you're moving through the story, but you are constantly being like, oh, in this little chunk of free time, I was upping my charm or my charisma. And in this chunk of free time, I was increasing a social link with An. And so it felt like everything you were doing was moving you in a forward direction in one of a thousand different ways.
And it comes at the cost of something else.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's like why in Destiny or anything else, it's like when you undertake, like when you're like, I'm gonna go for this gun via this mission, like you're not spending your time doing something else where you could up something else.
Yeah, you're not mining for resources, you're not doing the raid, you're not running the Nightfall. Assassin's Creed, and I love Egypt as a setting. It's something that like there hasn't really been a game that's big and taken it seriously.
Yeah.
Like, you get these fake Egypt levels in like Mario 64 and Gobi Desert in Banjo-Kazooie, but I wouldn't really say like Banjo-Kazooie couldn't have a mode that, you know, it's the discovery mode, or they take all the enemies out of the Egypt level and let you like learn about mummification and the Sphinx, which is a dog.
I mean, I do love, I guess we should talk about that. Like, I love that they're doing that discovery mode, because I think they're finally leaning into, like, I love the historical kind of, it's obviously not real, like it's revisionist history, obviously, but like I think it's really cool that they have this kind of like smart historical fiction vibe going, where they're taking real events and weaving them in. And so like, why not make an education mode?
Yeah, and they've always had real historical figures, like obviously it was caricatures of someone like Leonardo da Vinci, but this game has Cleopatra and Ptolemy, and I don't know. It's cool. If this is a way kids are going to learn about things, like, I'm all for that.
Agreed.
Cool. So yeah, that's what we've been playing. I've been playing some other stuff too that we can't talk about quite yet, but we should be able to talk about next week. I played quite a bit of something over the weekend that I liked a lot, but we'll talk about that next week's show.
You can talk about it by next week, right?
Yeah, next week. I thought it was 2 weeks, but it's next week.
Cool.
Hello there. Would you like to save money and play more video games? Well, let me introduce you to our sponsor, Gamefly. Gamefly is the best way to buy and rent all your favorite games. At Gamefly.com, you pick your favorite games and have them mailed directly to your door or mailbox. Gamefly is the leading video game rental service with over 9,000 titles to choose from. You can try your favorite games before you buy and keep the games as long as you want with no late fees. So if you're stuck on a boss fight or having a really good time, it's not a big deal. You can cancel at any time, and they also offer movie rentals too. Go to gamefly.com/farbeyond and start your free premium 30-day trial today. The premium trial allows you to check out two games and or movies at a time. You can only get this offer, again, by visiting gamefly.com/farbeyond. Now go sign up and start playing all your favorite games absolutely free for 30 days right now.
Before we get into the news, just a quick PSA is that if you haven't seen, October's Games of Gold is incredible. And when we said it's possibly the best month ever, we're not lying. There's a couple small games. Number two on it is the Amnesia Collection, which is great. If you haven't played Amnesia and then A Machine for Pigs, you should. They're really smart, really good first-person survival horror games. Obviously, October's a perfect month for that, so check those out. And then the biggest one, which is possibly the best game ever given away in either of the free services, is Metal Gear Solid V, The Phantom Pain.
Yeah, and it's especially crazy when you step back and think about all the free PlayStation Plus games and how good this catalog is if you've been getting everything. But like, yeah, this feels like this is probably the biggest game since they gave away like Uncharted, I guess.
Yeah.
Like I can't think of a longer, better, especially like if you play through Phantom Pain and then like want to jump into anything else, like this is such a good opportunity for even like a brand new PS4 owner.
Yeah, and when you look at like Phantom Pain's in our it's still I think in our top five top 25 PS4 games, and we've never gotten Bloodborne for free or Witcher for free or GTA 5 for free or The Witness for free, and so this is a game, and Phantom Pain can last you well over 100 hours if you want to put the time into it, and the fact that it's coming out now like is almost like it's like I wish this was like a June thing, where it's like, oh, for summer I could just burn through this game the entire time. But instead it's like, well, October also has, you know, looking across all the platforms, you have Cuphead and Forza and Shadow of War and Call of Duty is coming up, and then you have
Mario Wolfenstein Assassins,
GT Sport. So it's just sort of a wealth of riches, which is cool. I mean, it's also just, if you can't play it yet, just download it. If you haven't played it, just hit the download button. It's in your library forever, and then come back to it in January after
whenever you want.
Yeah,
it's also like a pretty smart PR move by Konami to like be like, hey, don't forget Metal Gear.
Yeah,
like eventually, like they've been really suspiciously quiet about Survive, but it's
like,
out there.
We expected to hear from it at Tokyo Game Show, and we didn't. Maybe we'll hear about it at the end of the month, which I guess that's another PSA, is that on 8 a.m. Pacific time on Monday, October 30th, as part of Paris Games Week, Sony's going to have a big media briefing where they've promised – the only thing they promised is new PlayStation 4 and PSVR games.
Yeah, and I feel like they like to kind of keep it to the ecosystem they're in. So like, I obviously think we'll finally hear about Dreams, because like Europe is Media Molecule.
I feel like predicting Dreams is your version of what studio is this finally going to be the year Studio Bend.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really safe bet that we'll get that. I think obviously more stuff on Detroit. Maybe even we get a date finally. I would say
probably not Metal Gear being a Japanese game, right?
Yeah, and I think they really do want to lean into first party stuff. Like I can see them doing maybe a God of War update. Like, it feels early for that in Spider-Man.
And
maybe they
save
that for PSX.
Yeah, that's the other big thing, is like PSX is coming a month later at the beginning of December, and that's where, like, I don't know, I'm expecting big, just like God of War, Spider-Man, like big updates on these games. I don't think we're going to hear from The Last of Us 2 or Death Stranding for the rest of the year.
I agree with that.
I think both of those are E3 games that we see next year.
Yeah, I think they have to be. I mean, Sony does this weird thing where like they crowd themselves into this weird corner where It's obviously the very end of October when they do that, and then PSX is 5 weeks later.
Yeah.
So they can't really, like, they can't double up, and there's not really a ton of crazy stuff happening in between. My guess is
the Horizon DLC comes out like 2 weeks after that. So
yeah, Frozen Wilds.
They show a big Frozen Wilds thing.
I think like the sure bets are that, Detroit, and Dreams, I would say. And then maybe either God of War or Spider-Man, and whichever one's not there is at PSX.
Yeah.
And then, Last of Us feels like a PSX move to me.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see Wild again? That's a French game.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he really good? Is Michel Ancel really going to show two of his games in the same year?
That would be like world ending, I think. Yeah, that would be really cool if
sure
he came.
Sign of the apocalypse.
Man, I would love to see another UB art game. Like, I hope somewhere in Montpellier someone's making like a cool, pretty art game.
I really hope so. Like, I wonder if those can still exist alongside the games as a service, which has clearly been working with them with The Division and with Rainbow Six Siege and with Wildlands.
Yeah, it's a kind of a fascinating year for Ubisoft, because obviously Assassin's is back, which is like, oh, they're back on their train or whatever. But their other games are more experimental than I think I really have stopped and thought about.
Yeah, and then early next year in February, we're getting Far Cry.
That's crazy. Cool.
Very exciting. So to jump into the news, as we mentioned, there is a new PSVR model that Sony announced yesterday. As you put here,
CUHZVR2.
The Cuzzover 2.
Yeah, exactly.
It has, quote, an updated design that enables the stereo headphone cables to be integrated within the VR headset for a slimmer, streamlined connection cable. It also has a new processor unit that will HDR pass. So Brian Altano is very happy that he no longer has to unplug his PS4 Pro from his PSVR and put it in.
But he's not happy because he bought the other one that doesn't do this.
Yeah. So the thing about this is the cables in PSVR are not modular. None of this is modular. So if you were a big Sony fan and were an early adopter to PSVR and a PS4 Pro like Brian was, it's sort of a slap in the face that now that major problem can be fixed for people who decide to adopt a year in.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the reality of buying tech early is that yeah. happens. Like I feel like being an early adopter, you know, that's the risk. And I think Sony, like they like doing this, like with their non-major hardware stuff. Like, I mean, if you look at what they've done with PSP and what they've done with Vita, like you get kind of not even necessarily major redesigns, but you get kind of subtle things that change yeah. certain ideas. Like obviously the Vita Slim switched to an proprietary charging port and like yeah. the battery life is better, but it lost that OLED screen. So I think you kind of... This is a weird example where, like, I don't see any benefit to being an early adopter.
Yeah.
Like, there weren't... Like, now, if you buy it right now, you're going to get...
This is just a better headset.
Exactly. It's a better headset. It has easier features to be compatible yeah. with modern tech. And now there's such a good library of games.
And it's cheaper now.
And it's cheaper. So it's, like, all across the board, like, I think being an early adopter in this case wasn't super great.
Yeah. But, like, and I don't want to sound too negative because that's, like you mentioned, that's just tech. As a whole, was a designed obsolescence where, like, you know, that's anyone who's ever owned an iPhone. That's the exact same thing as if you buy an iPhone, hey, a year later, there's going to be a better one for the exact same price.
Yep.
Like, that's just
how it is.
That's yeah. just how it is.
And like, it's if you're lucky, it's a year.
Yeah, totally.
I feel like that cycle is smaller and smaller. But I think this is like a good, hey, we didn't forget about VR move.
Yeah.
My fear is that, like, this feels like a 1.5. Like, I would imagine there is a
this
more
feels like
robust.
A 1.2.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's got to be a more robust plan for PSVR. Maybe they just abandon it, but, like, if they're serious about this being a major pillar, they need some kind of game changer.
I think I would love, since for PlayStation 4, you don't need to, I mean, they sort of have a roadmap where, like, they reveal a game a couple of years before it comes out, but they don't need to show in a timeline what we're getting for the next 5 years, because we know we're going to get cool stuff.
Yep.
Like, we've been PlayStation fans for the last, you know, 22 years or whatever, yeah. so we're fine. We trust them. With PSVR, like, maybe they do need to do a roadmap thing in the same way Marvel did with, like, here's a timeline of all of our movies coming out until 2020, and yeah, a bunch of that changed because The Inhumans got canceled and turned into a bad TV show, but, like, here's what our plan is. Like, maybe they need to be like, hey, so this is what's happening. We plan for this many games. We are partnering with these third parties. This first party studio is working on a thing that's going to come out in fall of 2018.
Yeah, I mean, I think the insane thing right now, the problem that they have and that VR has as a whole is that we're just so early. And I think, like, unless they somehow make a version, like, it can't, obviously, but unless they somehow make a version of this that's $99, I don't think they can get momentum. Because I think if they get on stage and they say, the next God of War is PSVR only, like, that's crazy and would get some people to buy it. I still don't think it's going to sell 40 million units or yeah. anything. Like, I think that they're to this point where the people who want to jump on the VR train are there. And yeah. I think, like, they're like Brian and many other people who have VR headsets, Vive or Oculus, but especially mm-hmm. PSVR, are happy with it. And, like, I don't meet that many people who regret the purchase or anything, but I don't think there's really a good incentive to make, like, me pick one up or to yeah. make anyone else, especially, like, if you don't have the money. Like, if you have a PS4 already and you have the choice between PSVR or just getting an Xbox One or Switch, like, honestly, I think right now the way better move is to buy a different console.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of people even in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond, which yep. is where we get a lot of our questions for Rapid Fire from. Mm-hmm. I think someone, like, mentioned, like, hey, I have some cash to burn. Should I get a PSVR or a Switch? And I was like, you should probably get a Switch. Like, yeah. honestly, I think both, like, what's on there now with Breath of the Wild and in a couple weeks Mario Odyssey, and then what it has in store for the future, I'm way more confident in it than PSVR. And while I think VR is really cool, like, Switch is going to be around for a while. I don't know if the support's going to be there for VR,
at least not in its current form. Like, yeah. I think that VR as an overall thing is going to be something. Like, I do think that there's a good idea. There's a kernel of a really smart, like, this is the way to change what games are and how we perceive them. But I don't think that bulky headset is it yet. Mm-hmm. And even if it is, like, I think the problem, they're kind of in this weird catch-22 where I think, like, people like me are like, oh, we need a big premium experience on VR. I want a 40-hour game. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to play a 40-hour game in VR. I think, like, maybe they should shift to the other direction. Like, they announced the Neko Atsume cat sim VR thing.
And then they announced the Sony Singing Pals.
The
whatever.
Music thing. Yeah. So it's like, maybe you go smaller.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. It's, again, like, do I want to spend $300, $400 buying one of these things so I can play a bunch of bite-sized experiences?
I mean, if it's the right properties and the right studios working on it, maybe. I'm promised that once every other month I'm getting something from a AAA, either first-party Sony developer or a partner developer. If every month I'm getting – it's like, oh, there is a Last Guardian experience, or there's an Uncharted experience, or a God of War experience, or if, like, you know, Capcom and Activision, you know, which they did at launch, they were like, hey, here's the Batman VR game, and then here is Resident Evil 7 in VR, and here is Star Wars Battlefront.
I think that's what they need. Like, the Tomb Raider one, like, is the only VR thing that's actually made me sick, so maybe it's a bad example. Yeah. But I think if they had, for every major game, if, like, in the way that Microsoft with Xbox Live, part of the reason that achievements took off is because they were required.
Yes.
You had to have them. They had to follow a style guide. Like, I think ultimately, like, maybe it's time for Sony, at least in first party, to just promise a VR experience with, like, imagine Shadow of the Colossus having a crazy VR thing in it where you can look up at, like, it doesn't have to be crazy. Like,
could you imagine the sense of scale of, like, looking up at literally any of the Colossus? Just, like, the first one.
Just do the first one. Exactly. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be any more robust than, like, letting me walk around a small space and look up at it. But I think Uncharted is the same way. Like, let me just walk around Drake's house. Like, it doesn't need to be any more robust than, like, it's a cool bonus feature. But I think that's the way you slowly trickle people in.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, like, part of it is that they're just not giving it, like, there are tiny experiences coming out, and, like, every single week there's something on PSVR, but they need it to be more reliable and more exciting, I think.
Yeah. Like, when we talk about how awesome the Sony exclusives have been this year already, which it was a little bit front loaded, to be perfectly honest, but, like, imagine if Gravity Rush and Horizon and Persona all had, and Lost Legacy all had something in VR. Like, in Persona, you could, like, go to wander around the cafe or go to Crossroads or go to the school. In Horizon, if you could just view models of all the dinos in VR and just sort of, like, it just looks like it's in a museum. Like, that would be so cool. And if that was accompanied with all these games, I feel like, especially all these games I'm already buying, like, if that was with them, I would totally buy a PSVR, and then that gets them in people's houses, and then you can start selling them solo things.
And I think that's exactly, I think that's, it's like that weird, like, Trojan horse idea of, like, I want to do this small thing. I mean, like, I understand why something like Persona or any, like, small team, it's going to be hard to, this game that's been delayed like 100 times to get, like, a thing like that in it. But first party has the resources, and, like, if Sony, I think the weird spot Sony's in right now, and why I'm kind of glad they had a shakeup in senior management, is because it feels like they don't think enough about ecosystem things right now. I think, like, they have this incredible momentum in PS4. Like, they can just stop and let third-party stuff come, and it would do great. But, like, I hope that at some level they're looking at all of their first-party initiatives as, like, an in-tandem thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's part of what happened at the Vita. They made a couple novelty, high-profile games, and they kind of let it die.
Yeah.
And I think you have to kind of build in that support all the way through. And PSVR is such a good supplement to the major games. And I think you nailed it. It's the stuff that I'm buying anyway. Like, if I'm the biggest Uncharted fan and I played Uncharted 4 and then I played Lost Legacy and I knew that both of them had extra stuff that I would get with a headset, or, like, Horizon, Gravity Rush, like, all of these first party games, Shadow of the Colossus, are such a perfect, like, all of those worlds are so cool and robust. Even Days Gone, like, and any of the things they have coming up, like, I can totally see them coming up with small, cute little VR things that just give me 35, 40 minutes of something extra to do. I don't know why they haven't done that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it, where it's, we see the same thing at work, where you put a lot of time and effort into something, you launch it, and then if you don't get immediate amazing results, you start questioning it, and you start being like, well, did we put our resources in the right place? Should we focus on what the surefire bets are? Like, I don't know. It's really tough when time and money is on the line to stick with something for the long haul if it's not working out well. And sometimes you do revisit those things and you're like, oh man, the thing that launched with only like 20,000 views 6 months later had like 400,000. So, like, sometimes things are the long run. Like, sometimes you know, Rainbow Six Siege launches and to sort of like lackluster fanfare. And then all of a sudden it just keeps getting better and better because they're willing to stick with it.
Yeah. Even Destiny 1 is like a great example.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's totally PS, like Vita was never able to catch up with what Nintendo was doing. And then the mobile market just sort of changed and it was sort of left by the wayside. And I hope that's not the case with VR. And, you know, maybe this, coupled with them promising they're going to be announcing some stuff at the end of the month at Paris is, you know, a sign of that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, they still have a great chance. Like, I mean, if you build this stuff into, like we said, shout out to Colossus, but man, GT Sport obviously already has major VR integration. Like, follow that model. Like, I mean, let's see what they can do with Dreams. Dreams has always been a great candidate for VR support. Yeah. I think God of War has such a beautiful, fully detailed world that it's like, why not just add something cool? Like, maybe not in the Shadow of the Colossus level, but I think even just looking up at giant God of War monsters would be cool.
Totally. And even maybe lean into a lot of people want these like forgotten PS1 and PS2 franchises to come back. Maybe that's how you lean into them. Maybe there's instead of making a full-fledged $60 medieval game, maybe there's a medieval VR thing or Jumping Flash or Parappa. You know, like maybe that's how you get these things instead of, you know, allocating $100 million to make a AAA game.
That'd be cool.
So yeah, shifting a bit, as you mentioned before, Sony has had some management changes up at the top. You had Adam Boyes leaving a little while ago. You had Shuhei sort of shifting a role. And the newest one is that Andrew House has stepped down as the president/CEO, which he has been since 2011. Mm-hmm. Andrew House, you probably have seen him on stage at various major announcements.
Yeah, he does like the really big stuff. So yeah, like the PS4 Layton. Reveal. Yeah, exactly. He's a nice British man who's also fluent in Japanese. So like you see him at, he shows up at their TGS conferences a lot. He was there at the PS4 Pro event. Mm-hmm. He was there at the original PS4. But he's not usually on stage at E3, for example.
And so the new president and CEO is a man named John Cadera, who has led Sony's network service businesses since 2013 and played a pivotal role in its growth.
Yeah, like I'm not really familiar with him, to be totally honest. It's a name I've heard, and I know about a year ago he got a big promotion when – so like the extremely quick version of that history is that there was always Sony Computer Entertainment, which was split into SCEA, SCEE, SCEJ, like all around the world. They recently just put everything collapsed into one. So network services and game development and everything under Worldwide Studios all became Sony Interactive Entertainment, which is one huge company that's based here in San Mateo, and that – entire organization was under Andrew House and is now under John Cadera. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's a little bit of a confusing org, but kind of everything reports up into one thing now. And John Cadera, about a year ago, because that reorg only happened, I think, a year and a half ago or so. And so he got promoted up when that happened. Maybe that was grooming him. Like, maybe this was planned all along. Yeah. It's a little bit of a weird, unclear situation. But Andrew House guided them from kind of a, maybe not even in terms of numbers, but in terms of perception, PS3 was in like a solid second place last gen into the powerhouse that PS4 is.
Sure.
So like on some level, leadership is going great.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't know what the internal politics are. Maybe Andrew House just wanted to step down, but like he had a good run. You know,
it's
been nothing but a great few years.
Yeah, I don't see this as this isn't that everything's on fire. I mean, clearly look at sales. Everything's not on fire. Yeah. I mean, doing something since 2011, six years is a long time. So yeah, I totally understand.
And he's staying on as chairman through the end of the year. Yeah. And I think he's out after that.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just interesting. I think Sony right now, they're decisively in first place, but a little bit of what we were just talking about, they just need vision. I think that it is definitely time to, like, I'm sure they're deep into these conversations, but like whatever's going to happen with PS5, it's like, how do you not, if you look at PS2 and then they were on top and then they fell, you know, in the PS3 generation, it just happened to Microsoft going from 360 to Xbox One. Like, how do you stay on top when generations shift? I think it's a really hard proposition that not many companies have been able to nail.
And also you're staying on top, like, Nintendo's doing something weird this generation. Like,
yeah.
Nintendo, this isn't the same horse race. Like, Nintendo all of a sudden is like, what animal are you riding? Like, we're both on horses. What are you on? And so, yeah, that is a really interesting thing of, like, I imagine a PS5 reveal is going to happen probably in 2019. I don't think it's next year, but I think 2019 and maybe a 2020 release.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, obviously the talks are already in that. Like, you had the Avalanche, the Just Cause developers, mentioned that they were hiring for someone for next generation consoles. So, like,
well, and like Cyberpunk and Death Stranding and a lot of like the really far away things. Maybe even Last of Us 2. I don't know. Like there are certain things I feel like we've already seen in the way that we saw Watch Dogs and it was very clearly not going to be a 360 game. I think that we are moving into this era where developers are thinking about it. And yeah. like the, you know, the tech that's in PS4, you know, was in R&D in 2012. The system came out in 2013. Like it's getting old.
Yeah.
And like we were just talking about that, right? Like in technology, that's a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's that part is interesting. And then going back to, I don't know if this is interesting to us. Like, honestly, like, let us know in the comments of the YouTube video or on our Facebook group. Like, are people interested in the sort of behind the scenes who runs these companies? Because I feel like it wasn't until like 7-ish, 8, 9 years ago when, you know, honestly, through the help of Greg and Colin, people figured out who Shuhei was, and Shuhei sort of became this prominent figure. And then Nintendo started putting Reggie at the forefront. And then after the Don Matrick era, Phil Spencer became the vision associated with Xbox. Like, it's interesting how they now like position these people as these are the humans you associate with these brands.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing because like I think Sony to some degree has always done that. Like I think like I like
yeah the Jack Trenton days.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like if you look at 2006, like it's all Kasarai. Yeah, like it's all the like, you know, like all those memes that came from that press conference. And they put Jack Trenton front and center. But I think you're totally right. I think that's become more of a expectation.
Yeah.
I think it's why even Nintendo Directs in the absence of Iwata have been really interesting because it's like, who do you get to be on them? You know?
Yeah.
And I think everyone's kind of looking for their figurehead.
Yeah. Nintendo's done an interesting job to where like, you know, Miyamoto has sort of taken a step back and is in the advisor role, which you've created this industry. You could totally do that.
Yeah.
But like you have guys like Koizumi and then like the Splatoon kids, they're probably older than me, but like that like younger generation of developers that they're putting
Like
they're probably like 45, those children. So I always think that's interesting. I always find like who they position as like the voice and the champion. Like Geo was the champion of Vita.
Yeah, I mean, and it's I don't know, like to some extent, because I was so used to how things were, like it's always weird to be seeing Sean Layden pop out. And I think this most recent E3 was the first time when I was just like, oh, it's Sean Layden, and I got used to him, you know.
And Shu wasn't out at all.
Yeah. And so it's like weird. It's an interesting shift.
Yeah.
I'm always fascinated watching kind of the political behind the scenes side of PlayStation, because obviously there are a lot of very, very smart people in that company trying to make sure that things keep going.
Yeah. And just piggybacking off of that, talking about a shift, we mentioned this a little bit at PAX, where PAX had major indie events from Sony and from Microsoft, or from Nintendo and Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
One thing missing was a Sony event. And we were talking about how, man, a couple years ago, like when Sony had on stage, they had Transistor on stage at E3, and they had just a lineup of indies with like Secret Punches and all these games.
There used to be literally the middle third of their press conferences were just indies. And I remember, what was it, Gamescom 2013 was the year when they revealed Rhyme, and when they just had all, they had like an entire incredible indie section that showed that was going to be a major push for them on PS4, and it was.
Yeah.
But I feel like now the tides have kind of turned.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we don't have those, like, they don't have the sort of incubation stuff where stuff like Sound Shapes and Unfinished Swan come out, and we got
Even
Finch, but that's just Giant Sparrow and Annapurna doing.
And even like major, like, you know, like those, like there's really no mid-tier in the game industry anymore. Like THQ fell out, and like you're seeing this kind of, I guess Deep Silver's kind of close, but you kind of only see indie or AAA.
Yeah.
And there's very little middle ground. I think the middle ground has been replaced by kind of high profile indies, so like Firewatch and things like that.
And I think even something like Hellblade, which is a relatively small team, which doesn't look indie at all, like that looks like, you know, AAA as hell, but like,
or like Brothers or and any of those things, or not Brothers, A Way Out.
Yeah,
like I think you're seeing games that like kind of fill this niche, and Sony was really good about securing those for a while, and I feel like that's, you're seeing that less and less.
Yeah, and case in point, like the biggest game on the planet right now is PUBG, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Mm-hmm.
We had this, you know, Microsoft talked about it at E3, and you know, we have the game in theory coming to Xbox One later this year, and then people are like, so is this ever going to come to PS4? Because that would make sense. There's a giant install base. So this week, Bluehole's founder said that he has, quote, has had some talks with all of the major console companies and is specifically, quote, in talks with Sony. But today, Bloomberg reported that Microsoft is likely to extend the exclusivity period, quote, until the middle of next year or longer.
Yeah, and like I know you guys are going to get into this on Unlock tomorrow, I'm sure, from some of the Microsoft side of it. I think from the Sony side, it's like, why are you not fighting harder?
You know?
And it's like, who knows, right? Like, I don't know what's happening behind the scenes.
Maybe Microsoft's war chest is just so big, and they're like, hey, you're a small studio. We are going to give you just carte blanche.
Yeah. And maybe that's what it is. I mean, the last time I remember really seeing Sony fight was No Man's Sky, because like there was that flood and I think it was Microsoft gave them money and then Sony kind of poached them away and they became a PS4 exclusive and we all know how that worked out. But like, I don't know if that left a bad taste in their mouth or something, like the whole No Man's Sky fiasco, and maybe that's why they're shying away from indies. But it's just such a weird, fascinating shift. Mm-hmm. Because PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds could not be bigger. It's the biggest game on Steam literally right now. And so like, it coming to console could be huge for Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not enough to turn the tides or anything, but I'm just surprised. It is really weird having kind of stepped back and been in the industry. Like, we've only been in the industry since PS3 era. Yeah. So it's not, you know, it's not like we have like this long storied history of watching the tides turn. I think this is the most in the middle of it I've felt for a long time. Like, I feel like when we are in the PS5, Xbox 2 era, I think we, we'll look back on this as kind of a pivotal moment in the same way that, that, you know, XBLA was for 360.
And, you know, I think it's just because Sony has a finite amount of resources and they are focusing heavily on aligning themselves with giant third-party games that are coming to everything, but messaging it to where the best place to play it is on PlayStation. Started the year off with Resident Evil 7. Yep. Destiny 2 is that. We know Battlefront 2 is that. We know Call of Duty is that.
Next year, Red Dead.
Red Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just got the Red Dead. Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about the Red Dead trailer.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
What did you think about the Red Dead trailer?
I liked it. I wish it was longer. I'm excited they confirmed the prequel. I think that's a smarter way to go. As much as I would love to see what happened next in kind of the aftermath of Red Dead Redemption, I think there isn't a lot to do there. I think this story is more interesting.
Well, it's also what happens next after Red Dead. The whole thing about about Red Dead Redemption is that it's about the death of the West.
Yeah.
And it's about the world was taking the next step into the future. So I'm like, at a certain point, it's not a Western anymore. You just like, you're sort of in like, the game took place in 1911. Like, you're about to hit World War One.
Yeah. Like, and that's the thing. Like, if you play as Marston's son in like the early 1920s or something, like
that's like literally like, what is this post? Like, this takes place after Battlefield One.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you're not cowboys anymore.
I think it puts you in a weird era. I think this is really interesting. And it has that prequel problem, you know, that Star Wars problem of like, we know where these,
we know what happens to Dutch.
Yeah.
He throws himself off a cliff.
I'm almost wondering, obviously, pure speculation.
Is that a spoiler?
I mean, it's been quite a while since it's been since Red Dead.
If it was, I apologize.
I wonder if they are going to do any framing device or epilogue or something hinting at post Red Dead. Like, even if they did like that Better Call Saul style, like Better Call Saul begins every season with something that takes place after Breaking Bad.
Yeah, it's like in black and white.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, like maybe not. Maybe they don't need to, but I would imagine people at Rockstar, somewhere in the back of their minds, know where that story goes.
Yeah, like, Marston has to be in the game. Like, you see Dutch, you see Billy Williamson in the shot of the...
And they have that line, walking. That line of, like, we need one more gun.
Yeah, you're like, that has to be... And a lot of people are expecting, because this new protagonist is just, in this trailer, straight up a bad guy.
Yeah.
Like, nothing he does is redeeming. He doesn't seem like an anti-hero. And so people are like, oh, maybe it's you play as him in the first act, and then Marston guns him down, and then you play as like a young John Marston, you know, back in the good old days with the old Dutch gang.
It's so crazy that Rockstar can just stop the world from turning. Like, it's like such an insane thing that like they didn't announce a date, and you know so many publishers are like, ah, damn it.
Just tell
like,
us.
Yeah. Everyone needs to move away. The second they're like, it's on March 30th, everyone has to scatter.
So wait, so that's the thing. There's two different, it says spring.
Mm.
And so a lot of people are like, it has to be out before the end of March to meet this fiscal quarter. But then there's other people who said on a Take-Two earnings call, they said that they were expecting it for fiscal year 2019.
Yeah.
Which would mean April 1st,
April 1st or later.
To
I mean, it's Rockstar, right? Like, if Rockstar has it done in March, it'll come out in March, but I can't.
But if
imagine...
Rockstar's like, we're releasing on October 2nd, they're like,
yep.
Yes.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing. Like, I think 2K's in a weird spot where, like NBA does fine for them, obviously, but, like, they had a very quiet year. And so I'm sure Take Two would love a Rockstar game to end up in this fiscal year. But the thing is, if it's not, then next year's really good.
Yeah.
And then they get to talk about their 400% increase.
Yeah. Whatever. And I mean, last year you had the really big 2K stuff come out with Battleborn and with Mafia 3. We just didn't have those single player meaty things. We know we're not getting another Evolve.
And I think those were big on paper, but they didn't.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, the things that they meant to be big. And so now you have to imagine, like, Borderlands 3 is clearly in development. That's possibly next year, maybe not. Maybe something with BioShock is happening. Maybe we get a Mafia 4. But I think, like, this is bread and butter.
Yeah, I think they need it. I guess I should say full disclosure that I worked for Gearbox for a year. But no, I think that I'm looking at kind of the roadmap for Take-Two, and like, if I'm Strauss Zelnick, I'm looking at that and saying, man, it would be nice to have it right now, but at least next year we know we have a surefire hit.
Yeah.
It's also the, as completely insane as it sounds, like the continued sales of GTA 5 are making them enough money that honestly, they might even be on par with like a Mafia 3 or a Battleborn, which is crazy. I mean, I don't know if that's true. But
I mean,
like,
it's literally still in the top 10 of NPD, and that game came out in September 2013.
A little bit of behind the scenes in IGN. We have this article. It's, I think, the top 25 Game Boy Advance games or top 100, whatever
top
it is.
Top 25 Game Boy Advance games.
That article consistently performs for us ahead of brand new stuff.
Yeah.
And it is such a consistent earner, like a consistent like traffic bringer, that it's like something that we always just look at and we're like, how is this
at the end of the year? It's like always in the top 25. And I'm like, how, what happened? Why do we do any of this?
Yeah, exactly. And so like, I feel like there's this weird boat where like, I feel like as long as GTA 5 is still that, like, they're in no rush to get
top 25 Game Boy Advance games is our GTA 5.
I think it is our GTA 5.
Yeah, it's our article of the generation. that's really
interesting.
Thanks,
Craig Harris.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. Yeah, and one of the things we were talking about, like, missing from 2K's lineup is I think everyone is looking for a Destiny-like.
Yeah.
And I think Ubisoft has sort of found that in a lot of their games as services. Like, I don't think any one of them is as big as Destiny, but I think combined, the games we mentioned, Rainbow Six and Wildlands and Division, can be that. You look at EA seems to be very much wanting to do that with Anthem.
Yep.
I think that's what Anthem is going to be for EA and BioWare. At least they're attempting for it to be.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, you see, like, these sort of thoughtful transactions being added to stuff like Shadow of War and like Assassin's Creed, to where like these things are existing in the world. So I think like 2K is like, what's that for us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and
which maybe GTA Online is that.
Yeah. I mean, GTA Online is the closest they have right now. Like, we don't know a ton about what Red Dead's online mode is. We know it's there.
We know it's there. Yeah.
I would imagine that. I mean, again, Rockstar can kind of do whatever it wants, but I have to imagine they want to just basically look at the blueprint of what GTA Online was and figure out how it works in Red Dead and try and emulate that success.
Yeah, completely agree. All right, so we're wrapping up this portion of the show. We're Rapid Fire is a separate thing now that you can watch over on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/IGNBeyond. Before we do that, we're going to take one of the Facebook questions because it pertains to something coming up this weekend.
Ooh.
James Rodriguez asked, any plans for New York Comic Con this weekend?
Not us specifically.
Not us specifically, but
I wish. I want to go back to New York.
Yeah, that'd be great. both Max and Jonathan are going to be there covering stuff. And I don't think there's plans for like a meetup or anything. So there is that, but we have a big WWE event of some sorts that Max is going to be at. I don't know what the details of that is, but if you look up IGN plus WWE New York Comic Con, maybe there's something like that.
Yeah, probably.
But if you're walking around the show floor or just New York in general and you see either of them, be sure to say hi.
Kirsten Slater, who runs our event stuff, has been tweeting about it. So number one, you should find her on Twitter anyway and tell her she's great.
And she's great. And she's the one who runs all the First Friday stuff here. So if you're ever in San Francisco on the First Friday of any month, contact her and you should be able to get an office tour and meet us and all that stuff.
Yep. That's for sure. So yeah, find Kirsten Slater's Twitter, tell her she's great. And also she has all the WWE Comic-Con info.
Perfecto. Then the final plug is just, our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/IGNBeyond. Go there, subscribe. And if you like those Let's Plays that we're doing every week, which, you know, Alana's been sort of producing and editing and doing a great job, which I've been having a blast with the Danganronpa one and the Final Fantasy 9 and Destiny, and we did
Knack 2. Yeah.
And we have a whole slate of them for the rest of the year, including some fun stuff for the end of the year. You know, give them a watch. Give them a like. Just leave a nice comment. And if you have any questions or any games you want us to play, let us know there. Thank you very much. So for Andrew, my name is Marty. This was Beyond episode 513, and we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.